The past.
Catholic schoolboys.
The present.
An ex-federale.
The future.
And Satan.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of red cum in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you. Rosebud.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the brand new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 17. And we've got a great show for you today. No, actually, I don't think so. But we'll see.
Wow.
But let me introduce you, my valuable co-host. We'll start off with Steve. Steve, how you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How about y'all?
No internets. So I got to go to Starbucks.
It's okay.
But
well,
I
should say that I'm refreshed because I actually, you know, got the day off yesterday, so my first long weekend in a while, so I'll take it.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the ever-valuable Ray Fuzz. How you doing?
I am fabulous. I am just fabulous. I think you need to re-record that intro just slightly, though. I think we need to do it in vain of the church lady. So I'd like to hear you say it. And say...
it's Catholic schoolboys, an ex-federale, and I don't know, Satan? Anyways.
There you go.
Satan.
That's my best church lady. I haven't actually heard church lady in a long time, so. Yeah. I kind of remember that dance, though. Anyways. Good thing this isn't a video podcast. Anyways. Let's go to the news. I haven't really been checking up on it.
There's not a whole lot that's...
Yeah, it's been a really slow news week for the most part. I mean, nothing major. I kind of picked these out of everything I could go through my normal sources, and I thought these might be the most interesting, especially the one we're leading with here, which is we've got some photos of the former 10th Doctor Who, David Tennant, as his role in the Fright Night remake as Peter Vincent, who was previously played by Roddy McDowall. And they are definitely going in a different direction with this character.
Yeah, like Chris Angel.
Yeah, well, you know, it kind of makes sense. I mean, that's kind of what magicians are sort of like these days. It'll be interesting to see how they pull it off. I'm sure it'll be good for some good laughs, you know.
Yeah.
But I put this on here because I knew, Steve, you were a big Fright Night fan.
Yeah, so. See, and seeing those pictures did not make me feel happy.
No?
Because I think the whole appeal of the Roddy McDowall Peter Vincent was the fact that he was a, you know, like this fumbling goofball. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't really see the Chris Angel kind of character, the fumbling goofball. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's not fitting with my mental image, and it's deviating way too much from the original at this point. So,
I think what we were kind of talking about this at work, and I think one of the interesting things that they could do with this is, since he's supposed to be a Vegas performer, and the name of his show is actually Fright Night, which I thought was funny, that he may, you know, like, whip off the wig and whatever, and you see him as just this little scrawny Scottish guy, you know. So
you're right. As you were just saying that, I kind of had that image in my brain. It's possible. It is a plausible theory.
Yeah, so we'll see. We've got some time. I don't think this movie comes out until a year from now. 2011, I believe. So, October 2011. So, it'll be interesting.
They should have gotten Elvira.
Yeah, that could have been kind of cool. And I kind of put this in as a what the fuck, really. The next one is photos from the set of the next Pirates of the Caribbean. And I didn't really think we needed another one of these.
I think we talked about this at one point.
We did, and I mean, this just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of seals the deal for me. I'm over the Pirates of the Caribbean series. I really don't feel the need to make any more. I have, like, no desire to see this at all.
And it says...
And Keira Knightley's out in this one, and they've got Penelope Cruz going in for...
Penelope.
You know? Yeah, I'm like,
All I think is weird says Johnny and Penelope share a night of explosive chemistry on set.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking through these pictures and I'm seeing how is there chemistry?
Yeah.
I don't get it. What's with the thought? It doesn't make any sense to me. So.
Yeah.
So. I get to spend the whole movie trying to figure out what Penelope is saying.
Anyways.
And lastly, I put this in here because I know we're going to be talking about some related items here. But a lot of people ask this question all the time, I guess, and people want to know if Mr. M. Night was ever going to make an Unbreakable 2. For those who don't know, he's working on these series of movies which are written by him and directed by somebody else. They're calling them the Night Chronicles. And supposedly the third movie in the series is going to be all the stuff that he wrote to make Unbreakable 2 but didn't have permission to use, so he's making it into a different movie. So I don't know how I feel about that. I guess he's still thinking about making an Unbreakable 2. He claims that it's one of his favorite of his own films, and it's the one he gets most asked about as far as sequels. So I don't know, just thought it was interesting. We're going to be talking a little bit about Mr. M. Night today. So,
What I have to say about this is I have no idea why people are like, are you going to make it Unbreakable 2? Unbreakable? And I'm like, Unbreakable was such a forgettable movie. I saw it and like completely forgot about it and didn't, like, within 2 minutes of seeing it. I could barely pay attention to that movie. It was completely uninteresting. It was horrible. I thought it was one of the worst movies in all the world, honestly. Maybe it's just one of the worst attention-grabbing movies because it doesn't grab my attention at all. I hated that movie, and I don't want to see it again. I've quote-unquote seen it once. I don't remember seeing it. I know that I saw it, but I can't remember seeing it. But I don't even remember what the movie was about. All I know is Samuel L. Jackson was in it, and Bruce Willis, and something about the Samuel L. Jackson character, like, was completely fragile or something, and Bruce was the opposite, and that's about it. I mean, this is me even trying hard to remember anything about this movie.
Right.
So I don't understand why anybody is looking for an Unbreakable 2.
Well, it's very base. The Unbreakable is kind of he kind of slipped a comic book movie in on people without really, that was kind of the twist, really. You kind of realized at the very end that you were basically watching a comic book film, and I think a lot of people saw potential for seeing Bruce Willis's character do great things, because you never really got to see him do a whole lot in this movie. So I think that's kind of why people are sort of, excited about it. I enjoyed it. I probably would say it's probably one of my favorite movies of his, actually.
Maybe I do need to see it again. Maybe I'll actually remember something about it.
It sounds like he's going to take it to a different direction, too. You know, he's going to focus more on the villains versus the good guys in this movie. So
it'd
be interesting to see where he goes with it.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit to you guys that I just had a total blonde moment because I was sitting here as you were talking about the Night Chronicles. I'm like, oh, Night Chronicles M. Night. I'm so sorry. I just totally... Tells you
just
how much
finally
I
got
cared.
That?
You know how much I've really cared about this whole thing. I'm like, oh, if it had been the M. Night Chronicles, I would have gotten it sooner.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I didn't realize it either until I was actually posting a story up about it.
Like, really?
Yeah. I saw the trailer again before Machete, and then they flashed the Night Chronicles thing, but they do it in such a way, I thought it was just like a production company. So I didn't get the fact that this was supposed to be some sort of trilogy of stories. So had no idea until I actually read the story and posted it.
I have the feeling that this trilogy is going to be more like along the lines of Baz Luhrmann's trilogy he did, basically with was it Totally Ballroom or something like that? Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge.
Right.
That was a trilogy, but it wasn't like the same type of like, you know, Star Wars trilogy, you know.
It's going to be an anthology of stories, basically.
But there's probably going to be some sort of connection.
Something weaving
all
them
three.
In between each other.
Yeah.
Although, Baz Luhrmann's trilogy, I don't really know what really connected them. Besides, one was dancing, one was words.
Yeah, it was all supposed to be about expression.
Language, and then singing was what Moulin Rouge was, so.
Yep.
Who knows? Well, the last piece here, since we're not reviewing this movie, I had to put in and say that I had a quick rant about The Last Exorcism, because I did a little extra credit this week and actually went to go see The Last Exorcism because I was so excited about seeing this movie.
How horrible was it?
And then I remembered my comment on my last show that I had heard through the grapevine that the ending was horrible. And that's probably one reason why it was not doing so well in the box office. And let me just assure you, the ending is horrible. The whole movie, I guess it was about an hour and 45 minutes or so. An hour and 40 minutes of the movie was fantastic. Just, I mean, I was totally into it. I got it. I got where they were going with it. Because since we're not seeing this movie, I'll just give you all the quick version and say it's about a sham preacher. This guy who had basically been a preacher since he was 8 years old because his dad was a pastor and he thought he would be cool to have a gimmick of having a kid preacher in his church. And so this guy had grown up in it and basically had lost his faith. And so he said, you know, this is my last ditch. I'm going to go do this exorcism. And I'm just, he had all these tricks to how he did exorcisms. And he showed all his tricks. Like, this was an expose on him. And he was letting them show, he was showing them how he faked smoke, how he used these little speakers to make noises, how he had these little actuators to shake the bed and all kinds of stuff. And he would get these, you know, crazy people to pay him, you know, $1,000 or whatever to exorcise their child or whomever, and, you know, he'd walk away with it. Well, he says, I'm just going to pick one, and he goes to this one, and it's, you know, it's the real deal, and that's what the movie's all about. And so it's him trying to really figure out what to do in this situation, because he's like, oh, crap, now I'm here, and I've got, you know, he's like, I got to deal with it. I've got the film crew with me. Everybody's freaking out. People are dying, what have you. And then the last 5 minutes, holy crap, just junk. Absolute junk.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it just turned into something completely stupid. They brought in this cult thing, you know, and then they, you know, I understand.
Jeff, are you shaving?
No.
Okay.
Okay. You just got really loud there for a second. Like.
Maybe it was the Skype connection or something.
Okay.
But anywho, if you're a fan of this kind of stuff, I highly recommend watching the first hour and 40 minutes of it and then just leaving.
Leave before the last 5 minutes?
Yeah. Just don't let the last 5 minutes...
Don't even watch the ending.
Just don't let the last 5 minutes spoil the movie for you.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to... It's like a train wreck. Now I'm gonna have to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I can recommend it as far as, you know, 98% of the movie. But again, like that last 5 minutes, I don't even know what these people... I don't even know who put the movie together in that fashion, because they were trying to connect a comment that was made earlier in the movie to the end. But they should have done like Blair Witch and just let people make comments about the Blair Witch and not necessarily pulled it all together at the end.
Right.
Just kind of let some of those rumors die out and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they ruined it. Ruined it, ruined it, ruined it. And I was one of those people, I looked at my friend and I was like, now I know why people threw shit at the at the screen in some theaters from some of the things that I read.
I hadn't kept up with it, so I didn't know that people were throwing stuff at it.
Yeah, apparently it was getting like major boos, and people were like throwing stuff at the screen and stuff like that, and some places. So, yeah. Mm-mm.
Okay.
So I highly recommend watching it and just being excited about what you get. But that last 5 minutes, I'm letting you know right now.
So basically, say. So it's worth seeing in the theater, or do you think maybe wait for the rental?
Oh, wait. So you can really throw something at TV.
Well, then you probably won't throw it because you don't want to break your TV.
There you go. Just you might get arrested for stuff.
But then this way at least they'll be able to watch it and be like, oh, that's a piece of crap. I'm glad I didn't pay full price for this.
Exactly. Wait for the dollar rental out of the red box.
Dollar rental out of the red box or instant streaming on Netflix.
There you go. There you go. But I was so disappointed because I was really excited because the girl in the movie who's possessed is actually Michael Bell, who we are all fans of as the same. In the 80s, he did a lot of cartoon voices. Very good game and cartoon voiceover acting. It's his daughter. And so this was her first, you know, major role. And the whole thing about all the contorting that you see in the commercials and all that kind of stuff, like, she actually did those contorts. It's not CGI. So she did all of that stuff and the whole bending backwards. She kind of was like, look, I can do this. And the director was like,
look what
cool,
I can do.
We're putting that. Yeah.
What, a professional like, contortionist?
I don't know. So, you know, so all of the stuff is pretty cool. And got a lot of suspense.
As Jeff goes on nature walk here.
Well, I went outside.
Yeah, we can tell.
Because it's not raining. So, anyways, where were we?
So that's the last exorcism. Just had to have a few moments since we're not doing the full review on it.
Sounds good.
I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. I gotta get back in time.
Hey, guess what? Griff is back, and I haven't actually listened to this, so hopefully this is the right one.
When a gang of 8th grade Catholic school students, including Kiernan Calkin and Emil Hirsch, gets caught drawing an obscene comic book, they seek revenge for their punishment and a reputation as school legends by planning a prank on a mean one-legged nun played by Jodie Foster. First-time feature director Peter Kerr helms this thoughtfully written adolescent drama that poignantly aligns fantasy with youthful experimentation.
Wait a minute. Did he say one-legged nun?
Yes.
She was a one-legged nun?
Yes.
Yeah.
Old peg leg.
She had a prosthetic leg.
I never saw that.
Yeah. Oh. That's why she had one normal ankle and one big cankle. You didn't see that?
I must have totally missed that. But
That's why she had like the leg that was made out of like metal in that one scene in the cartoon.
Oh, never ever noticed that.
They never explained why she only had one leg.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was totally irrelevant because the story it wasn't really anything about that. That just ended up being one feature, which I never even noticed. Let me tell you something about my feelings of this movie. I could care less. I liked the animation scenes. I thought they were integrated well into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the animation was actually the most interesting part of the movie.
Yeah. Did you notice who did the animated parts or who was consulting?
Oh, yeah. I actually, on the DVD, I listened to Todd McFarlane's commentary on it. So,
yes, Todd McFarlane of Spawn fame. I don't know. I've always had a special place in my heart for this movie. It's your classic sort of coming of age, teenage angst, kind of high school drug movie, kind of. That's the best way I could describe it. You know, it just happens to be it's supposed to take place in 1970, but they never specify that anywhere. Or sometime in the 70s, other than the cars. And it's also
I thought I read it was 83. Was it set?
If it was 83, those cars were all way old. But the novel that it's based on is set in the 1970s in Savannah, Georgia, and the filmmakers are kind of leery about kind of, I guess, pigeonholing the movie into that setting for some reason. So they decided to not really reveal where they were. They tried to keep it sort of universal, and that's why none of the characters have an accent, really, per se. I think
except
Jodie
Foster's character, who loses hers constantly throughout the movie.
Right, yeah, she kept losing her accent. But I don't know. I've always been entertained by this movie. I've always been entertained by this type of movie. I mean, it's a pretty stereotypical genre of film. Although I think this movie kind of goes places not typical of the genre. Spoiler alert here. We touch on incest in this movie, which is kind of one of the big reveals. And I don't think I ever remember another sort of coming-of-age movie revolving around incest. Anyway.
You know, the odd thing is, though, for that being such a big ball dropper, it really wasn't a big part of the movie. I guess.
More than... I guess you kind of look at it as... you know, the character's sort of, you know, motivation. What I find interesting was that I don't even think she had really talked to the main character for more than 5 minutes, and she's revealing this huge secret to him, which is kind of funny.
Well, I took assumptions on that they had gotten together several times before she got to that part. There were plenty of times where they've talked about other things and everything, and then at one point they start talking about sex in general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that kind of ended up coming up. So.
Right. Well, I mean, this was at least for the two characters, a very sexually charged movie. It's a bunch of boys all talking about girls and when they're going to get laid. So like I said, that part of it is very stereotypical. One of the reasons why I kind of picked this movie, and actually I thought about putting it in with Scott Pilgrim.
Hold up. I'm losing you, Fuzz. Hey, Jeff.
We might have to pause.
Yeah.
Hold on for technical difficulties. And we're back. So where were we?
Okay. Well, what I was trying to say before was that one of the reasons why I picked this movie, and I actually thought about putting it in the week that we saw Scott Pilgrim, was this movie sort of evokes in me the same sort of feeling of Scott Pilgrim. Like, this was sort of like a long-lost ancestor to that film with the animation and the way it drove the story forward. So this with comic books and that sort of feeling was kind of the same sort of thing with the video game narrative of, you know, Scott Pilgrim. Obviously it wasn't quite as integrated and wasn't as over the top as Scott Pilgrim. But I found them similar, in tone, basically.
Can see that. You know, I just kept trying to fight myself from wanting it to be, and I make a note of this too, is that it felt very Stand By Me, you know, just set in a Catholic school, you know what I mean? Like, kind of with little different twists, but at the same time, like, it felt like it was that same kind of group, and it was even some of the same kind of things they were doing, you know, like smoking and drinking, and you had the River Phoenix character and you had the Kieran Culkin character, you know, who were the kind of the antagonists, you know, and they were going to do something crazy together as a group, you know, like they were going to go down and look at the dead body, whereas they were going to go and, you know, knock out a mountain lion, you know, and put it in the nuns. Yeah, go steal the cougar and stick it in the nun's office. You know, or whatever was their goal. You know, just little pranky things that they were doing, and then some of them were like, I'm out, and, you know, they have the antagonists, you know, I guess it's the older brothers and in that move in Stand By Me, whereas it's kind of an older brother in this movie. You know, there were a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And even Southern Town, from what we understand. So there was a ton of different, you know, kinds of things. So I kind of really likened it in that fashion. And even in some ways, it was kind of sort of, you know, Stand By Me was a book being written, you know. Right. So this is kind of, he was writing a comic as a way to get out. I mean, and so there were so many things that were similar to me. That I kept having to go, gosh, this feels just like a newer version of this.
I guess I never got that feeling, because to me, Stand By Me is kind of like a movie about a journey. So much as they're going somewhere, they're all going to go together.
I see.
I don't so much see these guys as they're on a journey, other than they're kind of, you know,
getting through school.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So to me, that would be the main difference. But yeah, I can definitely see you got, you know, a group of buddies all messing around and, you know, shooting the shit and talking about girls and drinking and, you know, doing all the stuff that kids do when adults aren't around, basically, when you're that age, you know. So, like I said, there's been plenty of other movies that have kind of skirted this same sort of genre, you know. Mm-hmm. So, definitely not unique in any sense of the word, other than I think the use of the animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice on here the talking points. Do you think it enhanced it? I think it helped move the narrative, because basically what it was trying to do was show what the main character was thinking, basically. Mm-hmm. He's trying to visualize his internal dialogue to a degree. So I had no problem with the animation.
That's how I kind of felt. I didn't either. I thought it actually fit in with the movie really well. I was trying to think of, you know, what it would have been like if the animation wasn't in the movie. And I think that would have ruined some of the story.
Yeah, well, you can actually try that. I think you can try that out. I think the animated segments are all in their own chapters in the DVDs, so you could skip. and see if it makes sense.
It's true. Hmm.
Did it the first time you hit an animated sequence? Were you kind of freaked out a little bit? Were you like, okay, what the heck's going on?
Oh no, no. The first time it made sense because they kind of turned from human into the animation. Right. You know what I mean? Like that first part made a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, like later on, all of a sudden, you know, they would cut to the animation, then cut back to live action, and those were some of the pieces that got a little lost, you know, at times for me. But because it felt kind of like heavy metal right in the middle of this
okay
movie about kids in
definitely,
you know, in the South. You know what I mean? Like, you know, all
it was kind of like the whole Dar sequence from heavy metal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it kind of like split those things in the middle for me. So it was, but I mean, no, but I enjoyed the movie. I'm not gonna lie. I like these kind of movies. I'm just trying to be, you know, I'm just being a little bit critical.
That's fine.
Because if I compared this one to Stand By Me, I didn't get the emotional response I got from Stand By Me for this movie.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they were going for, though. I don't think they were trying to invoke that. Not going to give away the end. Did the end surprise you?
Yeah. I mean, I do think it did. Although I have to kind of say I kind of predicted it. I had not seen this movie, so when they went in, you know, with the blowguns and everything, I kind of in my brain, I was just like, look both ways before crossing the street.
Uh-huh.
Without giving things away.
I think they sort of foreshadowed it a lot in the movie.
Yeah.
That something was going to happen. At least something was going to happen to him, because everyone, you know, the nuns and the whatever in school are like, you're going to end up dead. You know,
if
you keep acting the way you are. So,
yeah, sooner or later somebody, you know, you know, keep playing around. Somebody's going to poke an eye out. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
All right.
That's what
well,
you get for breaking a saint's finger.
Jeff, you have anything to add?
Not really. Shows you how much I did not really enjoy this movie. I really have to say, with this movie, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. It just never got my interest until the animated scenes came around.
Yeah.
That was the only thing that really piqued my interest about it.
Your ears perked up.
I'm like, ooh, animated scenes with superheroes. Yay! And then the rest of it is just like, it, in some sense, it kind of puts context to the comics, the animated story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, the animated story, in all essence, is relatively short. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is not supposed to be the main focus. It's just supposed to be kind of this escape for our hero to outside of his real life, and demonstrating how things are changing. Like when they get to the point and Captain Ass Kicker and what was the other guy's name? They both get killed
Major
in
Screw?
The
Major Screw.
When those two get killed off, it was the same time that they kind of dumped those two guys. See this change with the Kieran Culkin's character going from the muscle to skeleton boy. It's all this representation that's connecting both worlds. I really like that connection, but for some reason, the only thing that really kept my attention was the animated scenes. And there was just, I don't know, and maybe it's just my time of life right now, that I just kept not being interested or what, but just the regular story. I'm like, the cougar thing? I'm like, really, guys? Really? You really think you can do that? That's just plain stupid. I would have preferred them to talk about it and then them not actually do it. They end up returning the statue or something. I don't know. It just didn't interest me, so I really don't have much to say about this movie.
Were you a troublemaker when you were growing up, Jeff?
No, I was the kid who was always getting beaten up.
Okay. Well, I like I said, I think it's kind of the point. You're looking at kids, and kids tend to do stupid things. They don't really think stuff through. One of them was trying to be sort of the voice of conscience and be like, you know what? No, we can't do this. And then it's all about sort of peer pressure and, yeah, we're going to do this. If we don't do this, you don't like me. You know, I thought you were my friend. And it's kind of all the basic kind of crap that kids go through. So to me, that's kind of why I think this is an interesting sort of coming-of-age sort of story. I think it's a very unique take on it with the animation. And that's why I brought it up and wanted to see what you guys thought about it. And if you're into those kind of things, check it out. I think it's kind of cool.
So. I agree. We're seeing.
I think I drifted off. Did we cover our talking points here?
I think we missed one. I had a thing on there about Mr. Culkin in there. Just, you know, since we saw him in Scott Pilgrim and we've seen him in this movie, not so much the gay thing, but does he seem to be typecast to you guys? Does he kind of plays sort of like the asshole sort of character?
A wacky friend?
You know, yeah. I don't think so. At least, I can't think of many of the movies that Karen's been in.
Uh-huh.
Besides, you know, Home Alone. But that was like forever ago, and I haven't seen that in a long time. But
this is a brother.
I know, but he was in Home Alone. He was the brother in Home Alone.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right.
He wasn't Home Alone.
That was a long time ago.
He wasn't the main character, but he was there. I feel like I see a very different character. I mean, yes, he's the supporting role in this, but there's just something about his character in Scott Pilgrim versus this movie. They're two different types of people, and I don't mean just the whole gay thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Scott Pilgrim, he was more of kind of the lazy encourager.
Mm-hmm.
While in this movie, he was more of the instigator.
I was going to say the active encourager.
Well, he's the one that's doing it, and he's just getting his friends to go along with him.
Right.
And while in Scott Pilgrim, he just... It's like, Scott, you're in this position. Fight! You know. So.
Right. Be like, oh, it'd be more cool if you did this, you know. Well, I don't know. I just thought the two characters were sort of similar, and there's a couple other movies I've seen where he sort of played similar roles, where he always tends to be kind of like the jerky sort of antagonist. And I just thought it was kind of a little observation there. So that's all I had, really.
All right. So
what did we learn?
What we've learned. Three full servings of distilled and reduced NyQuil are no effect on an average house cat. Statues of Sans are much heavier than they appear, but magically get lighter once they reach the ground. I kind of disagree with that, because they were moving the without the thing.
I don't know. They seem to be having a much harder time with that thing on a pulley than they were when they were dragging it down the street.
Well, they were dealing with gravity, more with gravity on that. When they were actually dragging it down the street, they had it on a cart. And then they had that one time where they're putting it into that one thing, and they were having trouble dragging it in. So I don't know about that, but nuns make excellent comic book villains. I have to agree with that. It's not really. That's a really thoughtful question.
That's a really thoughtful question.
Okay.
Yeah.
It shows you how much I really paid attention to this movie.
That's a really thoughtful question.
Always better to wait a few dates? Always better to wait a few dates before dropping the incest bomb on someone. That is that. It's a cute mini. The animation scenes are well integrated. Recommendable. But you know what? It just couldn't keep my attention out of the animation scenes.
Well, maybe we'll just have to have you watch it again when your situation chills out.
I'm fine. All right. Where were we? Did you guys go through your recommendation?
Sort of did. You want me to say it again? Like I said, it's a very unique, interesting coming-of-age story, which, I don't know, I've always found them enjoyable. So if you're into that kind of thing, you dig animation in any sense of the word, check it out.
And I just said that it seemed very Stand By Me in the 80s in a Catholic school, but that I liked the unique twist that this movie brought. So I recommend. I would recommend.
Sure. I think we're all say definitely recommendable.
Mm-hmm.
So now this. And this week for our present movie, we saw Machete.
And another nun.
Hired to assassinate a politician, Vigilante and ex-federale Machete nearly dies when a sniper shoots him during the job. Out for revenge, he's joined by a reluctant old buddy played by Cheech Marin, who's become a pacifist priest. Written and co-directed by Robert Rodriguez, this homage to exploitation films based on his fake trailer in Grindhouse co-stars Robert De Niro, Michelle Rodriguez, Lindsay Lohan, Jessica Alba, and Steven Seagal.
I mean, would
Seagal.
You really consider this a Grindhouse movie?
Oh, yes.
Totally.
Oh, yes.
Maybe I don't quite know what a Grindhouse movie is, because this movie was so bad in keeping consistency.
That's part of the Grindhouse thing.
Yeah, it's like bad edits, bad graininess, bad... You know,
I don't
like,
know about bad edits, but I mean, the tone of the movie is just all over the place. Because you have these parts which are absolutely hysterical, like all the cars coming out of the shop, Machete's chop shop, and a couple of them have bouncing cars, and it's just this... It's, which is absolutely hysterical. Then you have all these serious moments, he's getting the job, gets the gun, works on it, grabs it. Sure, you have that kind of little thing where he gets the gun, but then he grabs the machete off the table because, well, he's
right.
Machete, you know, which to me is, that's like the humor that would be in a regular action movie. You know, you get your gun, you go off, and because you're known for using knives a lot, and especially machetes, you grab a machete on the way out. You know, it's the kind of funny, ha-ha, some you don't necessarily laugh at. Maybe you do, but, you know, it's not, you don't have to, but it's a little bit of humor for an action movie. I can see that. It's the line of sight, it's the betrayal thing.
Yeah, you kind of
and
think
then
of,
you have
you know,
this really
Schwarzeneggery. There's a little Schwarzeneggery, like he'd stab somebody to the wall and be like, "Stay here," and walk away. You know, you kind of expect that.
Mm-hmm. Well, but then I you mean, have the thing where he like takes the guy's intestine and he jumps out the window and uses that as a rope, which it just seems so out of place to what the movie was up until then. And then you get to the point where you get
this. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Maybe I just don't like Grindhouse movies or something.
Well, I mean, Grindhouse films kind of is like an all-encompassing sort of genre. There's so many things that can be considered a Grindhouse movie. Because Grindhouse actually refers to the theater that you see it in. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's talking about sort of old rundown movie theaters that showed B flicks, they would show really bad splatter films, blaxploitation films, spaghetti westerns, the always classic women in prison movies, mostly from around probably the mid to late 70s, maybe a little bit of the early 80s sort of thing. So, I mean, I guess, you know, we were this is a classic, I guess you could say, mexploitation film, sort of.
Yeah, where it, yeah.
You exploit, you exploit a particular subject matter. So you're exploiting all the things about the Mexican culture in this. You're exploiting the violence, the romance, the over-the-top kind of crazy porno sex scenes that were in here with the porno music. I mean, it's all sort of kind of all feeds together into this sort of crazy grindhouse sort of thing. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I put this on here is like, do you think that that whole sort of trying to resurrect the grindhouse sort of film really is kind of lost on today's audience? Do you think they're really getting that that's what Rodriguez and Tarantino have been kind of trying to do? A lot of Tarantino's movies are sort of modern takes on grindhouse films.
I would think that this has a specific audience, and that's probably what, you know, the similarities to like Scott Pilgrim, like, is it a broad enough appeal to middle America and all that kind of stuff? No, but I don't think that Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez necessarily make movies for middle America. They make the movies that they want to make, and they just hope that people appreciate them. You know, and for what it is, I mean, and also, this is just riddled with political statement after political statement. I mean, I guess they couldn't have predicted all the stuff with Arizona to happen, although they make reference to it, you know, in the fake video that came out April 1st, you know, like...
I know, that was awesome.
Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. you know, but certainly they gained some following because of all that stuff going on. They couldn't have planned that any better to happen the way it kind of did around this movie. But I think that it actually... I think the grindhouse made sense for this movie for what they made it. You know, some of the crazy people that they brought in on this movie. I kind of wish in a way that they hadn't brought Lindsay Lohan in, though, and they had just, like, let Rose McGowan play the daughter. You know what I mean? Since she was in the others. That would have just kind of made it more sense to me. But I guess they wanted to get her name in there to see if it would be a draw to something, maybe.
And supposedly all the, I don't know how they did it, but supposedly all the scenes where you see her naked, it's a body double. Just so you know.
I can see that.
Well, that's okay. I don't like seeing those scenes. Anyways.
And she was a nun. That's two movies with a nun.
I'm just kidding. I know. I'm just picking them, man.
I know. Two nuns and Satan.
Yes, Satan, exactly. I put this in here because when I saw this film, I saw this at 5 o'clock on Sunday. And there was a family. Yes, a family. Mom, dad, and three children. I don't think any of them older than 10, maybe, in this movie, watching this movie.
Oh, I saw it too. I was like,
you've got to be kidding me.
I saw this on a BBD show.
Yeah.
But that's different. That's just people who wanted to go see a movie, and they got a baby, and they don't want to have a babysitter.
Oh, yeah. I saw kids in ours, too. There were kids in ours.
But I didn't have any kids, per se. I mean, we had, I think, one couple who brought their baby. But the baby wasn't really watching the movie.
Right. Okay.
It's like
a little baby, I can understand. But I kind of made a joke about it because I was like, the kids were well behaved. They were either well behaved or they were in shock. One of the two. Couldn't tell which. Because there's
a lot
of stuff.
How did they even get into this movie? Well, I suppose they're with their parents, so.
Yes. I mean, and they sat in the same row with me when they came walking in. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I wanted to run over and cover up some of their eyes sometimes, but it was just like, okay, not my kids.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, not my kids.
Let them be.
This is why we should have to get a license to breed.
God, I won't have to deal with that.
I saw this with a pretty mixed audience, and it was also included this group of, like, drunk 30-year-olds. And then, of course, I also saw this at the theater where this was in Ybor City, so you could actually go down to the bar and bring drinks back up to the theater. And so the whole time, you know, this one guy was like, woo! You know, whenever anything would happen. And I just wanted to, like, stab him in the face, like, with the machete.
Yeah.
Because I just was like, oh my god, if you don't stop drunk hooting, I'm gonna go nuts.
Well, there's a question I have for Jeff, because not a lot of this movie, but obviously some parts of this movie were shot in Austin. I remember them talking about the fake political rally they had in front of the Capitol. So I was just wondering if you had heard or seen anything when they shot this movie.
Nope. Didn't really pay attention, so. Too much, so. But yeah, hey, it's a Robert Rodriguez film. Of course there's going to be shots in Austin.
Yeah. So.
Well, I was kind of surprised, too. Like, I kept thinking about there's so many actors in this and, like, who would actually get much of the screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Were y'all kind of surprised that Jessica Alba was in so much of this movie?
What surprised me more was that she was in as much as she was, because she wasn't really mentioned a whole lot in the trailer.
They keep talking about with Jessica Alba, so I assumed it would be like a few scenes. Mm-hmm. But she was in the whole movie,
pretty much.
My thing that I thought was interesting was it said, "And introducing Don Johnson."
Yeah.
I knew, because I, you know, I'd seen the trailer a bunch of times, and I knew that he was in the movie, but I completely forgot that it was him watching the film.
Yeah,
off as Don Johnson.
I didn't even think about it. I think he, like, looks fatter, and he's always, like, wearing a hat and sunglasses the entire time. So it was a little harder to really tell that it was him based off of what you remember, you know, Nash Bridges, Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm. I was just trying to think.
Cheech
Marin,
of course,
was
obvious.
In very many movies? Was Don Johnson in very many movies?
I think he did a bunch of them. You know what? There's this thing called the internet.
I am trying to look it up myself.
No, right. Lots of TV.
He's just a TV star. When in Rome.
There's a couple movies here and there.
Long Flat Balls 2?
And Lieutenant Falcon from G.I. Joe the Movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I totally didn't. I totally lost it that was him while I was watching the movie. It could have been anybody. I wouldn't have realized that it was Don Johnson. But
so yeah, maybe that's why they were saying introduced. That's all I was thinking. I was like, because maybe he wasn't in too many movies.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who knows?
We have answered the question that was plaguing people's minds.
now,
for centuries. Why was it introducing somebody who's been around forever? That's what tonight.
The whole issue with Cheech Marin, and I kind of, you know, I was kind of surprised. He can, I mean, I guess I just haven't paid attention, but he can act. He was funny.
Oh, yeah.
He was good in this
movie. Have you not seen Nash Bridges?
Yeah, well, you're right about that. No, you're right about that. hadn't even thought about it from that perspective, but you're right. But my favorite line from the whole movie was delivered by Cheech.
Oh, yeah? What was that? Yeah,
he was the best actor in this movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. When he was just like, I absolve you of all your sins, now get the fuck out. I totally wanted that to be the byline for this week's show.
Oh, it can be.
I mean, we haven't set in stone our title yet. Yeah. Maybe we go. Maybe it is right now. We have a title.
I just thought that was the most hilarious delivery because he was just like, you know, he was like, I absolve you of all your sins. Now get the fuck out.
Yeah. Well, he's talking to his. And says buddy, but it's not just buddy, it's his brother.
Yeah.
So this just shows you Netflix does not have the best synopsis movies. Just let people know.
But yeah, so overall it was a fun movie though.
Yeah, it was fun, it was enjoyable, so I mean I think it's worth seeing the movie if you like those kind of movies. It was one of those things where I didn't know what to think because the funny parts I laughed at, I really enjoyed them. I mean, just some of the funny bits, like when he gets into bed with one of the girls. I mean, he never actually... when they wake... They cut to the wake-up scene. He's completely dressed.
Yeah.
So it's really seems like
every woman that he lies in bed with.
Well, here's the thing: is did he have sex? Is the thing, or was he a perfect gentleman and they didn't actually have sex? So,
right.
So they just make it look like that, and he just laid in bed with him. That's it. Mm-hmm. But he was completely clothed, and he didn't actually have sex. So, but then that's up to your own imagination because they never really say.
Exactly. And that's sort of kind of the whole, I mean, they're really over the top, well, not over the top, but when I say over the top, I'm talking mainly because anytime he had any sort of romantic involvement with any of the ladies, the immediate horn, you know, wow, music would kick in, and it just made me giggle every time that it happened. But that's kind of the point. That's why they do that. It's supposed to make you laugh, because it's like, oh yeah, here it comes. But, I don't know. I could probably go, and I could probably watch this movie 100 times. I love this movie. I do.
I didn't love it. I probably won't see it again. Yeah. But if it comes on, I'd be like, hey, check it out. It's Machete.
It's my peeps,
man. I don't know that this is going to be on. I don't know that this is ever going to be on regular television.
Oh, God. I think they would have to cut everything out of it.
Yeah. This is not going to be like on cable or anything like that. Just because of how... Yes, but I mean, like, if you go over to a friend's house and see the movie, and they go, hey, let's watch Machete. And I'm like, okay.
I think it was better than Planet Terror.
Honestly, I didn't see any of the Grindhouse movies. Either one, Death Proof or Planet Terror. So, I can't say.
What about, all right, this is kind of, it's still considered a Grindhouse film. What about Jackie Brown?
Didn't see that.
Okay.
It's been a long time. Yeah, I'd have to rewatch it.
Pulp Fiction is kind of a modern Grindhouse, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, but that seemed more consistent to me. Like, I really knew... I really knew what the tone of the movie was in Pulp Fiction.
Well, like I said, that's the thing about Grindhouse films, is they kind of... There's many, 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 many subgenres in Grindhouse, so... You have...
I'm cutting out.
Losing you again.
Yeah. Drop me up, dude.
Hmm?
Your volume doesn't let me talk.
Yeah, I think that's the people talking behind you, Jeff.
No one's talking right now.
Oh. Try again, Fuzz.
No, I pretty much had said what I needed to say. I'm good. You know... I don't know. I can totally see myself going to see this movie again in the theater. I will definitely own this movie when it comes out. So,
sure. Yeah. I definitely will watch it again just to see the stuff. Because the funny thing about this and is that I found myself laughing. You know, which is what I knew when I knew I was watching a good Grindhouse movie, was I was laughing at completely inappropriate moments. What normally should be like high tense, you know, like bloody, gutty moments, I'm just like, ha ha! You know, it's just like...
Oh, yeah, and I can definitely get those type of movies, like right. Kill Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, or any movie where there's essentially a whole bunch of death and destruction, but it's absolutely hysterical.
Well, it's
I love those type of movies, and I had my moments in this. I don't think much of the killing per se was I thought was funny. Just you know this certain moment. My key moment was the coming out of Machete's chop shop, and then having the cars that bounce up and down, and then. Driving away. I thought that was absolutely stark.
I liked it when the two nurses, two hot nurses, come out with their Uzis.
Oh, that was awesome!
Yes,
that was awesome. I love that one. I mean, there's a lot of good bits in this movie.
Yeah.
My only problem with this movie, is that. I had a problem with the consistency of the movie. And, I mean, that's the only thing. Otherwise, totally something I'd recommend people go see, just being aware of that. Because some people might be like, who cares? Some people, it's gonna bug. And I think, to me, it kind of bugged me. I enjoyed myself in the movie. I liked those funny bits. I laughed out loud. So, I'm good with this movie. It's just... there was just something that just felt so off that I just... I can't say an absolute, like, 5 stars or anything like that. I would say, like, 3.5.
I guess the key to figuring out this type of movie is the fact that you have to realize that the movie is taking itself way too seriously than it should. It's doing that intentionally. Because that's what makes it funny. So I think that's kind of where you can get your signals crossed there, because they're like,
well,
we're talking about this super serious topic of, you know, immigration and political corruption, and this camp and craziness. You know.
You know, when you just said that, Fuzz, it made me think. If it made me think back to last week's discussion about Hudson Hawk for a second. Mm-hmm. That remember how I said, like, Hudson Hawk, you guys were talking about it doesn't take itself seriously. And my comment I remember being was my problem was it didn't take itself seriously enough that I could really figure out where I was going. Uh-huh. And I think if there was some seriousness to Hudson Hawk, it could have been a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think this had just enough seriousness where it was trying to take it so seriously and make a statement that when some of the crazy stuff happened, it was funny.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Comic relief.
Yeah. Comic relief in a really tough sounding thing. And I don't know that Hudson Hawk had that kind of serious tone to it. Well, clearly it didn't. But, I mean, how do you, you know, cat burglars, you can't really make that too serious. You know, but I think that's where an element was missing with that movie, where this one got it right. And I think it was, I mean, and again, I think that just the political tone of our nation right now helped this movie a ton. Like, if all that stuff hadn't been going on in Arizona, would this have really been as poignant is a question.
Right.
Maybe to people in California, you know what I mean? But what if the rest of the world had paid attention to it, you know?
I'd be interested to see the box office results from Arizona and Texas. You know, see how it did.
Well, one thing for me on this was I was not expecting this type of movie. I was expecting more of an action movie or some sort of action thriller. The comedy was not expected. Enjoyable, but not expected. So it kind of threw me off on this. So I know I'm sounding kind of like the Debbie Downer on this. I can't believe I just said that. But I don't know. There's just something about the movie. It was good, but it's not.
Well, now I'm going to have to put the other two Grindhouse movies on the list.
Yeah.
Just to see your take on it. I have to say, though, that my favorite comic relief in this entire movie was Steven Seagal trying to actually play a drug lord from Mexico. An ex-federale drug lord from Mexico. That was the biggest comic relief in this movie.
That's kind of why I put the point in there that I did.
What do you kind of mean, Issy?
Okay, that makes sense whatsoever coming from your mouth.
Of all the people to pick that play that role, they pick Steven Seagal, which is just hilarious. And this is the first time he's ever played a all-out villain.
Hmm, true.
Yeah, so that's always interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, what did we learn?
So, what we've learned, and I lost my place. here's what we learned while watching Machete. How to steer a car with a machete through someone else's back. We learned intestines are 60 feet long and incredibly rip-like. Weed whackers make awesome weapons.
Oh yeah, I quit.
That was that was one of my favorite scenes. Those characters, the bodyguard, the guard characters in this movie were awesome. They're some of my favorite. They were just my favorite characters, anyway.
And you know what? Just kept going and getting whacked in the face. Hey!
If he didn't turn out to be such a train wreck, I could totally see Tom Sizemore playing that role.
Get true.
Machete, don't text. And De Niro makes a more convincing Mexican than Seagal. It was confusing on what this movie wanted to be. Had some good laughs, had some good action scenes, but it was just too inconsistent to me. So it's just a meh. Go see it if you want to. I'm not going to stop you.
All right. I'm going to counter that with I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. I would love them to make the Machete Kills sequel.
Machete Kills again.
I would definitely go see all of those. If you dig any of Tarantino's past work, the Grindhouse stuff, fiction, check it out. I will definitely own this when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. So,
agreed. I definitely enjoyed it. I realized I laughed out loud during some intense moments a lot of times. Speaking of Tarantino movies, this is Tarantino Rodriguez movies. This is one of my favorites in a long time.
Awesome.
Yeah. If I'm going to recommend the Tarantino Robert Rodriguez movie, I'm going to say just watch Pulp Fiction. It's a much better movie. All right. So that means we're going from the present to.
There's going to be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
Okay, so maybe it's a little delayed, but in the future we're talking about the first story in the Night Chronicles, Devil. And from my understanding, this is Shyamalan has written the story, but he didn't actually write the screenplay or direct the movie, which is probably a good thing after his last disaster.
We'll see.
So I from the trailer, so basically what it is, it's set in an office building. Five people get stuck in an elevator, and no one can get them out. And then they think that someone in there could be, I don't know, Satan? Or the devil, so.
I think the concepts of the trailer, I'm a little leery of Mr. Ebbite, so it'll be interesting to see how this all sort of pans out. And I guess, you know, sometimes not having the guy who wrote it, direct it, or write the screenplay is not necessarily a bad thing, George Lucas. But
your favorite. Agreed.
Because
there's a lot of people who have great story ideas, but they can't write worth crap, and they can't direct. And honestly, I bet you anything that if George Lucas did not write or direct, like actually do the screenplay, the actual script for episodes 1, 2, and 3, and he didn't direct them, he just kind of, you know, put the money in, did the producer role, but left the director seat to somebody else. The prequel trilogy might have actually been good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to parlay this into a George Lucas discussion, but I mean, one of the first times I ever saw this trailer in front of something, you know, when they're doing the little flashes of scenes from the movie, and then there's, you know, they keep talking about, like, you know, all of a sudden it flashes on there from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah. People in the audience went,
audibly groan. Yeah.
Audibly groan. So it's like, guys, if this movie does poorly, and they've already got the second of this trilogy in the works, I don't know how far along it is, but my advice to them would be, you need to pull his name off of, do not use his name as a selling point to try to get people to see these films. I think the train has left the station when it comes to his pulling power. He's had one too many screw-ups,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's that old, you know, fool me once, you know, shame on you, fool you twice, shame on me sort of thing. So,
right.
But away from all of that, you know, and I'm with you, I'm leery just because of M. Night's involvement. But the trailer has me interested. And maybe I'm a wackadoodle. Yeah, maybe I'm just completely out in left field and I'm a wackadoodle. But the trailer has me interested, mainly because, I mean, it's that fear factor kind of movie where it's like you've got the intensity, you've got the, are they going to fall? You know, they're stuck in the elevator. Are they going to run out of air? Who's the bad guy? You got to watch everybody to try to figure out who's the bad guy. You know, I love those kind of, like, it makes me think of Cube. You know, Cube and the Cube series. It makes me think of those other kind of, you know, we're all trapped together, who's the bad guy kind of movies, or who's possessed by the demon and we're all trying to get out of the house or whatever. It's those kind of things, and I like those. So, you know, so far the things I've been seeing, I'm kind of drawn toward it. I think I would probably see it, even though I know what he did to the movie that shall not be named.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and, you know, and I fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
Right.
You know, I watched it, and I know, but like you said, I'm taking it on faith that this was just his story idea and is not his production.
Right, somebody else is going to run with it and do something good with it, hopefully.
So I'm hoping that that will be the redeeming quality of this, and we'll get to see something that's actually well done with his concept.
Right.
The trailers I've seen, I'm down. You know, so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing
it. But you never know with these trailers, because you know what? To me, Avatar looked awesome in the trailer.
Yeah. So did Last Exorcism.
Yeah.
I think Last Exorcism for me was the worst letdown in the last era.
Well, we'll have to see about that. I think this type of movie I'm just not interested in nowadays. The thrillers, I want to see more action, sci-fi, that type of thing, I think is more of what I'm interested in, the fantasy. Like Harry Potter, totally psyched about, but this movie, I could almost care less for. It's just meh. Might be good. I'm just not interested in it.
Right. I think I'm just excited because this is kind of a supernatural horror slash thriller. I like that.
Well, I would definitely say out of the three of us that you tend to be the horror genre
the scary movie
guy.
Liker.
Yeah. The scary movie liker. I do like them, and like I said, I'm totally in agreement with you about this one. That it's going to be interesting. The trailer is interesting to me. I'm interested to see how they pull any of this off, or you know, what kind of tension they're able to build in this film. It's going to definitely play on people who are claustrophobic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Again, same things. Looks cool. Kind of looking at it, you know, with you know one eye open, just because M. Night's involved in it. So
yeah. And I think I'm gonna like this as long as I don't figure it out in the first 5 minutes. Then I'll be mad.
Yeah.
Make it a little more confusing. And then I'm good with it.
Huh. All right, and I think that's about it.
I think so.
I think we're wrapping it up here. Coming attractions next week in the past, we'll be talking about Indian Summer,
the 1993 movie.
I'm sure I got the right one here.
Yep.
I think I did. and I flipped away because I popped over to Netflix for a moment. The President will be taking a look at Resident Evil Afterlife. Totally psyched about that. And then in the future, one that I could care less about, Gulliver's Travels with Jack Black, which, wow, that's going to be a great movie. everybody check out our website where you can make a comment. Tell us what you thought about these movies. Am I wrong about Machete? Is this something that was totally consistent and an amazing movie? Or did it absolutely suck? Did you agree with me? Well, actually not agree with me because I thought it was interesting. Anyways, that movie confused. Actually, both of the big movies that we watched this week confused the hell out of me. I don't know. What did you think of Dangerous Lives of Walter Woods? Did you like the whole mixture of live action and animation with kind of two different stories, but we're also kind of connected? Did you hate that? Tell us. Leave a comment on our blog at movies.cubsoutloud.com or shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/colmovies. We're also on Facebook. We have like your discussions on Facebook. facebook.com/colmovies. And don't forget to pop into iTunes. Give us a review, preferably 5 stars, but you know what? I'm not going to hold you to it. But we encourage those 5 stars immensely. So all I got to say at this point in time is, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, good night, everybody.
Bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. I just stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
Welcome back.
end of line.
Yeah, I think Saturday Night Live should probably grab Dana Carvey, or maybe Funny or Die or something. Grab Dana Carvey and do a parody trailer.
Baby.
It's like, oh, I got cut. Who could have done that to me? Who could have been? Satan?